What's up, everybody? Welcome in. It's that time again, the Sooners On Our Side podcast, the first Sooners On Our Side podcast of 2025. I'm Ryan Chapman, and why weren't we here yesterday? We were watching football, people. What do you want from us? We were watching the football. Sue us. That's what we do here. Joined, as always, by our fearless leader, John Hoover, all the way up in Tulsa. John, how are your vocal cords doing today?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to everybody. We'll try to not have this podcast over at halftime like the college football playoff has been so far. We'll try to finish strong, third quarter, fourth quarter, entertain you all the way through.
We're also not going to go to overtime today because I got to get to the Sooner women this evening. Our man Carson Field, have you recovered? Are you good? We're not going to say the word targeting today, but other than that, how are we doing?
Doing great. Haven't seen you guys since last year. So it's good to see y'all again. Bummer of an ending, but a hell of a showing by the Sun Devils. Proud alum right here. That was an awesome game. It showed that ASU is here to stay. So I can't be that disappointed. I'm not going to mention that word you just said. But there's still so much to love. So much to love about the future for ASU. What we still have coming back, Sam Levitt, Jordan Tyson, so many good players. I mean, Tyson didn't play yesterday, but one of the better receivers in college football. That's going to be fun. So I was bummed. Believe me, I was bummed. Took a good nap after that game, but it was fun to see ASU play so well in that game. College football, I'm going to miss it, but I'm excited to see what ASU does next year. So let's get into it.
Yeah, I think we had a lot of listeners probably spiritually riding with you yesterday. I am watching. You're going to have to forgive us. Notre Dame, Georgia, cooking in the background. It is just there. So
I've got it on in the back room back here. So if you hear some noise and screeching going on, it's probably Sean McDonough calling a touchdown.
Yeah, for if you hear noise and screeching, as always, it's Scout the Dog rioting usually. But I just took her out, so hopefully we avoid that. All right, let's dive into it. We game podcast air famously, infamously, John and I ran down some of the stuff that we set the table for what the offseason was going to be. And we started with there were rumors out of Morgantown that Zach Alley might be leaving. It was pretty quiet on the Oklahoma front. And John and I left Amon G. Carter Stadium. Basically, see, we'd be shocked, surprised if Zach Alley ended up as your defensive coordinator at West Virginia. At Cold Takes Exposed, we hear Zach Alley is now your defensive coordinator at West Virginia. There was a little bit of a sky is falling. What's going on here on Saturday? Now that the dust has set a little bit, we maybe have slightly more context. Have you taken a couple of days, thought about it, anything change, or is this still kind of what the heck just happened here, guys, as Oklahoma gets a defensive coordinator poached by West Virginia?
Yeah, you guys probably saw my column the next day after Zach Alley left, or the evening that he left. A lot of fans obviously upset about not necessarily Zach Alley leaving, like, oh my God, we lost Zach Alley, but just more the tenor of, are you kidding me? Oklahoma lost their defensive coordinator to West Virginia? That's the tenor of what's going on. How did this happen? Why did this happen? How did the program that Brent Venables has been in charge of for 3 years now, how did the program slip to this level where people are jumping off? People that came in as his understudy, people that said, Brent Venables is like my second dad, I love the guy. You're now having to replace that person because he wanted to go coach under the other guy that he's coached for, Rich Rodriguez. He would rather go coach for Rich Rodriguez and work for Rich Rodriguez than Brent Venables. And there's probably a half a dozen reasons involved in why he did that, money being one of them, of course. I don't know how excited Joe Castiglione was to take Zach Alley's salary from $850,000 to $1.5 million, which is close to apparently reportedly what he got at West Virginia. But there's probably other reasons that have to do with Brent Venables not turning the defense over to him like he probably thought he was going to, right? I would not think the SEC, coaching in the SEC, is something that's going to make somebody flee and go get another job. I don't know. It worked for Lincoln Riley, but a defensive coach shouldn't do that, right? I don't know. The bottom line is it's bad optics. It's not a good look for Oklahoma football to lose their defensive coordinator and start the search again. They got to replace both coordinators now for the second year in a row. So it's just not a good look.
Yeah, well, if West Virginia Starley rolls out there and is playing 3-3-5, a little bit of the stuff that we saw more at Jacksonville State that Allie had previously, then I think it makes even more sense of look at, okay, were you micromanaged? Were you let to run your own thing? Oh, you don't even want to run this defense. You'd run that defense, which if like Oklahoma should not be running a 3-3-5, so that's fine with that. You roll with that, but it does, Carson, set up a second straight offseason now for very different reasons, where Oklahoma's looking for a new OC, new DC, now that they've already hired their offensive coordinator and Ben Arbuckle. But certainly you had a year ago coming into this thing, Zach Alley had come in for Ted Roof. You had Seth Luttrell coming in. And it's just a, if nothing else, I would expect this to not look super different, the defense, Carson. But when you go into year four and it's your third coordinator on each side of the ball, it just leaves kind of like a sour taste in everyone's mouth, I think.
It does. And we have, the three of us have talked so much about how this is going to be a make or break year for Brent Venables. He kind of has to make a splash here. He has to get someone that is going to have immediate results with this defense. Allie, he did, by most metrics, I would say a phenomenal job with this OU defense in 2024. The run defense was spectacular. Even in the games that OU probably looks back as, we probably could have won that game. It was not on the defense. A lot of the defensive things, especially defending the run, were so good. And that is a testament to what Zach Elley did with this program. I agree with what John said about the optics. Going to a Big 12 team that finished 6-6 this year. Rich Rod, obviously, he is a long-term veteran in this sport. But still, part of you's got to look at, okay, SEC team that has won 7 national titles in its existence versus West Virginia. Part of you's got to look at that and be like, okay, is this really going in the right direction? So it is, it's going to be a big, interesting next few weeks looking for a defensive coordinator for Venables, see if they can get the guy that is going to stop the run like Allie's defenses did, stop opposing players because you have a lot of flashy players in the SEC these days. It's going to be interesting to see who they can get. So I'm very interested to see what that looks like, what the search looks like, who exactly they're going to go for, but it's going to be big. I think this is going to be a very interesting job hunt.
Yeah, I don't know how big that list actually is going to be, because it's Brent Venables' defense. We know this. It was just basically you need
Right.
someone like Zach Alley who can come in and run it so that Brent can do more head coach stuff throughout the week. I don't know if that's a good thing, because when Brent Venables touches stuff in this program, it doesn't seem to go well, i.e. the offense. But you feel very, very comfortable with him on the defensive side of the ball. And entering a make or break year, frankly, I assume Brent Venables is just going to revert back to what we saw under Ted Roof, which is Brent Venables as your defensive coordinator, and someone else is going to get a title. That's why when who I put the hot board together, there were only four names on it, and three of them are already in Norman. Brandon Hall, Oklahoma has three guys listed as co-defensive coordinators by title: Brandon Hall, Todd Bates, Jay Belai. All three of those guys. Brandon Hall has called plays before. Boom, there you go. And then Wes Goodwin from Clemson, who has not done a great job with Clemson's defense, but he served as, much like Zach Alley, a less student assistant up to GA, but he was a graduate assistant for a bit. Then he went and served as a special assistant in the NFL to Bruce Arians with the Cardinals. Came back and started a very similar, like, analyst special assistant to Brent Venables' role. That would feel like a pretty comfortable move. He's going to be your linebackers coach. And frankly, like, regardless, I'm kind of expecting Brent Venables to be calling plays on Saturdays next year.
Yeah, you could get like a one for one, a guy to come in and coach linebackers and be the defensive coordinator or the co-defensive coordinator, whatever you want to call him. But I'm starting to get the feeling that 2025 is going to be, with Brent especially, he's smart enough to know he's on the hot seat. I think Brent's going to, instead of sticking his neck out and saying, I'm going to be the CEO head coach and turn it over to these two guys, this guy we hire on defense and then Ben Arbuckle on offense. I really think he's going to be the defensive coordinator. I don't know how many coaches right now, head coaches, call defense. There's not a lot of them, I would think. And I don't know how many of those defensive-minded head coaches just kind of meddle in the defensive game plan and the defensive coordinating and the game play calling and whatnot. But I don't know if there's really more than probably two or three, if that, that actually call the defensive signals, or even in a kind of an adjunct way, like Ted Roof did, you know, where hey, here are the scenarios. We're working together on this, you and me. You're going to call this in these situations. That was the Ted Roof model. It wasn't great, but Ted Roof had worked with Brent Venables enough to know how it works. If it is Wes Goodwin, who's, you know, people are saying in Clemson, as of our recording, we looked it up this morning. Some are saying he has been fired. Some are saying he will be fired. Some are saying he has been relieved of his duties and whatnot. If he is, then I would think Brent would probably not race to scoop him up, but he would certainly bring him in for an interview. But just, you're right, on staff, Brandon Hall, in terms of his experience, in terms of his ability to, you know, coordinate a defense and then call the signals on game day, Brandon Hall's the guy that is on staff, at least, that has done this before and probably looks good and would look forward to the opportunity of doing it one season at least with Brent.
Yeah, Brandon Hall has had now his 3 years is more experience with Brent than Ted Roof had when he took that defensive coordinator job because he just spent 1 year. Goodwin has spent more years with Brent, obviously, more than just the one season. Also, just total random aside, it's not like an Oklahoma thing. I find it very weird in college football in general, you get this in the NFL. There's like a double standard of like defensive coach calls the plays, total disaster.
Yep.
Offensive coach calls the plays. Yeah, he's the guru, he's the genius. Who else would you want doing that? I just find it funny how that like works in college football and the NFL when like I kind of view it as the same thing, but it certainly doesn't get it's like bizarre why Carson one thing's okay, one's different, all
Yeah,
that.
it is weird. North Carolina defensive coordinator Bill Belichick, for instance.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, who's gonna
Yeah,
call,
it's like
who's he gonna hire that's gonna go in and say, "Bill, I got this. I'll call your defense." Who's got that?
other than his son.
Him too.
But it's weird. But either way, Carson, it's everyone knows it. Penalty for Brent Venables. I would expect this goes reverts back to something that we certainly saw Hoove and I did through the first 2 years, which is a lot of Brent Venables getting involved. And I think part of that, Carson, too, though, is some of the idea with the Seth Luttrell hire. I think was, hey, he's been a head coach before. Let him just he can lord over the offense. I can lord over the defense, stuff like that. There's certainly a lot more faith in what Ben Arbuckle has done, even though it's a shorter track record of him running his own ship. That I think Brent Venables is going to have full faith to say, you go over there, do your thing. I'm going to go run the defense, whether that looks like physically calling the plays or doing everything but calling the plays on Saturdays.
Yeah, no, I said that they need a splash for this position, and I think that's accurate, but I don't think this hire is as important as the offense. I think getting somebody like Ben Arbuckle that's proven at Washington State, not a power team necessarily, but one that played against teams like Boise State, Texas Tech, played good teams along the way and showed that they have really good offense. That is huge. I feel like with how good of a defensive mind Brent Venables has proven to be at Clemson and even his few years at Oklahoma, there's a lot to build on there. So somebody that has some of that familiarity with Venables, how he runs things defensively, I think that's your quote splash hire. Get someone that may not be the sexiest name on the list, but it's somebody that knows defense and knows how to coach with Brent Venables. I think that's the best thing OU can do. It doesn't have to be a Belichick. It doesn't have to be somebody with that crazy name that everybody knows. But somebody that is very established in defense, has a good track record of producing good defenses, and knows Brent Venables. I think that's the best thing OU can do.
Especially with you talk about rolling into this continuity. Everybody that's coming back. Robert Strish Jennings, he's coming back. You got Kip
Yep.
Kobe coming back.
R.
Jaden
Mason.
Jackson. Yeah, R. Mason Thomas that needs to do his thing so that we can all just move on. We would appreciate that. Thank you very much. Eli Bowen, certainly. It would make all the sense in the world. So now you're kind of on to Brent Venables when we last talked to him and said there would be some more portal additions coming here over the next couple of days. Let's see. Since we last spoke, Oklahoma has added a trio. They got tight end Will Huggins from Pittsburgh State, which is just huge, big time scoop up get. Can't miss him. We saw him play in the college football playoff this week. Oh, no. They also got wide receiver Josiah Martin from Cal. who is popped up in a lot of highlights Oklahoma fans probably watched years ago with Jackson Arnold, things like that. 12 catches in his freshman campaign, pretty productive in the bowl game there. And then Oklahoma's just absolutely ravaging of Kennesaw State's roster has continued. Today, they added kicker Austin Welch, who went 14 of 18 this past year in his first year as a kicker as a junior. I believe he was at Eastern Kentucky before that, had only played in one game in his first three seasons. 14 of 18, his longest was a 39-yarder. Nothing outside of 39, basically, for that. So, I guess that Doug Deacon liked the Owl special teams operation, as they already have the punter, they already have Carson Kent, the tight end. It's, yes, Kennesaw State, worst offense in football. Bring on all the specialists and the tight end.
They have raided Kennesaw State. Think about that. A team that reclassified from FCS to FBS this year. They'll be full member, I guess, next year. They've raided Kennesaw State's special teams. What are we even talking about here? Wow.
He was an honorable mention All Conference USA kicker, John, apparently. I don't know what honorable mention kicking gets you in Conference USA, but that was true.
So that's 26 out for Oklahoma and 12 in. The numbers game is working out. Brent Venables is doing the thinning that he has to do of the roster, get it down. But yeah, Will Huggins was a guy who I think he was at Kansas for 3 years or 4 years. Barely got on the field at Kansas. He goes to Pittsburgh State, down in the it's like an hour from Tulsa, is down in the far southeastern corner of the state. Pitt State, a Division II, just animal. Their mascot is the Gorillas, and they have a long list of national champions. They're Division II, very respected powerhouse program. He's 6'7", 250. He's a guy that can go up and get a ball. I've seen some highlights of him doing that. They're a little hard to come by, but they're out there. And he's supposed to be a big physical presence on the end of the line of scrimmage, something that Ben Arbuckle, hopefully, for him, wants to establish, wants to get a big guy to hold down, set the edge kind of on that inline tight end spot. Josiah Martin, like you said, played 1 year in high school with Jackson Arnold. Played a second year, made All-State, 1,200 yards receiving or something like that. I think he was over 1,000 receiving, 20 touchdowns in his last 2 years of high school there at Denton Guyer. He's got some talent. He was a guy that was wanted by a lot of schools. Now he's getting back close to home, and he's coming to Oklahoma as a wide receiver from Cal. He didn't really do much his freshman year. Didn't have big numbers or anything like that. But this is a situation at the wide receiver, especially. Actually, I say that wide receiver and tight end situation where you need bodies and you've got to open up competition. You've got to get as many guys in there as you can and create competition. Now, are these the right guys? Are these guys that are going to come in and impact the position, make the position better, make their teammates better who are already there? I'm not Zoltar, the magnificent future teller, but hard to say.
Yeah, it's a certainly not done looking at that. Just today, John Locke, who's a tight end from La Tech, had posted that he had gotten an offer from Oklahoma. I personally hope that happens because regardless of if things happen or not, there are a lot of philosophy puns that can be made there, which would be helpful as we get through a long off season. But of course, I think the eyes might be a little bit more toward a couple of guys that are in and around campus here the last couple of days. Marvin Jones Jr., a name from Oklahoma recruiting past, formerly of Georgia, formerly of Florida State, defensive end that might be a big addition to that defensive end group that is very, very talented on paper, but there's just a lot of unproven production when it comes to PJ, who was banged up to start the year. We haven't seen Danny Okoye yet, but adding him with then R. Mason Thomas, who is coming back. And then Kendall Daniels, a name that Oklahoma fans are very familiar with in-state, on campus to basically get a look over for the cheetah position, stuff like that. The biggest headline names might be still to come for Oklahoma here in the portal.
Yeah, those would both be good gets. I think there is a time and a place to get those recruits or transfers, that is, from smaller schools. You're going to get some FCS players, some low-level D1s like your Kennesaw State. Maybe OU fans don't want to see three from Kennesaw State, a team that just reclassified. But that's going to happen. That's the portal. But both of those names, Marvin Jones Jr., Kendall Daniels, that's a lot of name recognition. A lot of people know those names. And I know Kendall Daniels, for example, he's a proven player at Oklahoma State, so that would be a good get. So just seeing where that goes, if it's not those two, I feel like they'll probably get a couple more players from big schools, stuff like that. But if there is one area that I do think the Sooners have done well, it's wide receiver. I think between getting that commitment from Josiah, that's huge. Satanga, that's a big commitment. And FCS, we talked about this the last time we were on this podcast. There are so many good receivers, Hall of Fame receivers in the NFL that have come from the FCS level that I don't think it matters as much for that position as, say, quarterback, defensive lineman. I think that is a better position to get FCS players. And I think OU's done a good job replacing the Nick Andersons, Andrew Anthonys, Brennan Thompsons, everybody you can name. There's like six or seven at this point. But I think they've done a good job there. And if they can just get one or two more guys there, get a couple big names anywhere on the roster, defensive linemen, secondary, anywhere they can get them, I think that makes it look a little bit better, this effort from the portal in the 24-25 window.
The name of the game, production, something that the large swath of injured players had none of last year. So whether you love, a Javonnie Gibson or not, he did a lot more a year ago than Andrew Anthony did by virtue of being on a football field.
I was
So
going to ask you. I was going to ask you, Ryan, would you rather have an FCS guy or Division II guy even who played a lot last year and put up big numbers? Would you rather have somebody like that? Or would you rather have somebody who didn't was a four-star recruit and he didn't get a chance wherever he was, whether it was UCLA or Wisconsin or wherever? What is more appealing and what is more useful for this program and in this case for the wide receiver room?
Yeah, for the wide receiver, well, theoretically, you had the opportunity of the wide receiver to not pick, but get both kinds of profiles just because you needed so many guys, which is why we'll see how the wide receiver thing works out. You'd feel a little bit better if you could have gotten like a Gerard Brantley or something like that. That would have been just one more guy that's built up experience. Because,
Micah Hudson.
yeah, something like that. Because Quyontaez Lewis obviously had that at UCLA, Wisconsin. So you pair that with, like, Satanga feels like a pretty much like-for-like replacement for Brennan Thompson, although it might be a little bit more reliable being on the field, things like that. But, like, at tight end, it's just still reminds me, like, what the hell are they doing? And as long as Jojohn Finley's coaching them, you're going to get no development from any of that. We'll see. That'll be the open question, right? Once you get your defensive coordinator named, all that stuff, the next thing is going to be, is someone going to actually come for Jojohn Finley? I don't know who's looking to hire Jojohn Finley. I don't know why anyone would hire Jojohn Finley based off what he's done at Oklahoma, which is just coast off of Shane Beamer's talent and then have awful tight end room since then. We'll see with like DeMarco, all that stuff. But
Tell you what, the guys that are
I think the
visiting,
other. Go ahead.
gonna say the guys that are visiting out of the portal right now, Marvin Jones and Kendall Daniels are in town this week. Hugely productive at big schools. And, Marvin Jones, a former five-star guy, Kendall Daniels, former number one player in the state of Oklahoma. Kendall Daniels was wanted by Oklahoma. And Kendall Daniels wanted to go to Oklahoma, but Alex Grinch wanted him as a linebacker. And here he is now, 4 years later, after playing safety and linebacker and hybrid for 3 years and going crazy with some of the numbers, some of the productivity that he put up at Oklahoma State. Here he is, 3 years, 4 years later now, and they want him back at Oklahoma, where he wanted to go the first place, as a linebacker. As a cheetah linebacker, which gets to play a lot of coverage, so it really fits his strength, but it's a hybrid position and he's a hybrid type player. I think he could really do some damage in that position for Brent Venables' cheetah spot.
Especially with the just relying on Kendall Dolby to just get back up and running from a really, really, really tough injury. That's one of those things where I don't need to tell anyone of just like timelines look fine. Everyone just went through the Andrew Anthony experience. Not say that Kendall Dolby's gonna be that way by any means or anything like that, but you're telling me that you can get. I mean, we saw it was just 4 weeks, but the cheetah position, not that it was like a massive weakness, but I don't think it's a coincidence that as Oklahoma's trying to take on a bunch of these wide receivers in the SEC, Kendall Dolby not being around was going to be a huge blow. And grabbing a guy like Kendall Daniels is great cover, if nothing else, a guy that can get in there mixed up and certainly a ton of experience. And then A guy like Marvin Jones Jr. is like what I've been hoping that th would be added to this defensive end room. Just round that thing out. Very much, very similar to adding Trace Ford a couple years ago, right? Is you're adding experienced guy, played a bunch of football, not going to be there for a ton of years that would block the truly block the pathway of like a Danny Okoye or certainly more growth from PJ, but help out guys that if not you like the room on paper, but you're really, really hoping guys take some leaps forward and stay healthy. This really, I think, helps make you a more resilient roster just to the wear and tear. Because up front, at least, Oklahoma's defensive line was pretty fortunate this year. Of certainly, they're a lot better, but really, what Caden Woolard at the end of the season and PJ with his weird situation at the very beginning of the season. Other than that, the defensive line stayed mostly healthy outside of having to put a cast on David Stone midway through.
Yeah, it was a good year for the defensive line, and you guys probably know that because you read our report card on the defensive line. We're doing a daily series since the end of the season. Great, giving a report card like we do the last, what, 3 or 4 years, Ryan. We're giving report cards and grades to position groups, and where are we at right now? We're like three in. I think I did the offensive line this morning. So yeah, check that out at SoonersOnSI.com because there's going to be a bunch more coming right behind it.
Yeah, we've had special teams, defensive tackles, O-line, DNs is tomorrow, and
Running
that's
backs.
always been the plan. Running backs, we've also done running backs. Defensive ends is tomorrow. That's always been the plan. Don't check with us. And then as we go, we'll build into obviously hitting every single thing. So we'll keep that up and running as we do sort of turn the page a little bit. We're in the tail end of portal season, technically defensive coordinator search season, but then it'll be fully into just tracking the last little boxes we have to tick here. Is every assistant going to stay, or once everyone, the coaching carousel goes in waves, right? Then it becomes the other shuffling of assistants, stuff like that. And then we'll slowly turn the page over to hoops as a couple of top 15 teams, top 10 caliber teams with the Sooners are going to begin their SEC adventures this evening, actually, starting with Oklahoma and Texas on the women's side of things. Before we hop over to hoops, though, one last little thing here, guys. This is always what I like. First off, we cover college football, so we love college football, so we're always watching college football playoff, duh. But I do try to take the step back when Oklahoma's not involved and see, were there any big takeaways as far as things that you saw in the college football playoff that might apply to Oklahoma as far as what they're trying to get to, things like that. And I think, John, my biggest top line takeaway so far has been if you just spend $20 million and get all the best defensive players and then get out of your own way and don't play Michigan, you're going to be a pretty good football team, I guess.
Ohio State's pretty good. Ohio State seems to have a Michigan problem. The thing that strikes me so far about the college football playoff is Texas. You know, because we're obviously viewing this through the lens of Oklahoma. Texas continues to roll, right? They get to the SEC championship game. They get into the college football playoff. They win that game. I mean, I hate to say it. You guys that are listening, you hate to hear it. It was announced on July, help me out, 16th, something like that, 2021, that both Oklahoma and Texas would be joining the conference together at the same time. It was announced at the same time that they would be going in together. Guys, one team looks like they're not only SEC ready, one team's basically kicking the rest of the SEC's backside. And makes the college football playoff and makes an impact, hangs on to win a game they probably shouldn't have won against Arizona State, but yet they won it. And here's Oklahoma going 6-7 for the second time in 3 years and looking for a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. It's two programs that when they hit the news in July of 21 that they're going to the SEC, it's like they bounced off each other and went in different directions. It's like, how did Oklahoma, Joe Castiglione, Joe Harris, Brent Venables, name your administrator, right, that you're pointing a finger at. Go all the way back to Thad Turnipseed if you want to, right? How did Oklahoma let Texas get away from them like this? This is 15 years Oklahoma has dominated Texas on the field and in the boardroom. And here we are 3 years into this news and the first season of the SEC. And all you got to do is turn on the TV and look at the college football playoff, and you see what an SEC team looks like coming from the Big 12. Did you guys see the tweet from Eric Bailey when it was 14-0, he said, "Hey, Arizona State, this is what it used to look like in the Big 12." 100% right. Of course, Arizona State came back and, made that a great game, and Texas kind of crapped down its leg for a little while. But how did Oklahoma let Texas get that far ahead, whether it's recruiting, NIL, portal activity, coaching on the field? I told you guys a couple of weeks ago when Sark was hired, I was like, that's a terrible hire. That's a terrible hire for a number of reasons. And here we are 3 years later, and I'm going, Sark is one of the best offensive minds in football. He's a good head coach. It was a great hire. They fooled me. They fooled whoever, was in charge at Oklahoma at that time. How did this happen? How did it turn so Texas get away from Oklahoma like this? That's the question that
Total role reversal. It's wild, you know what I mean? From the
it
last 6 years,
is.
like you said. But I guess one of the good things is, first off, Texas never had a talent problem. So I know that the NIL resources is like a big talking point, but it's like, yeah, they've always had the best players, and they've always, whether it's been what they do with them. I guess the good news though is, Carson, if you just look to, the team on that other sideline from Texas yesterday, you can turn this thing around very quickly. You can turn this thing around with players that either didn't get a lot done at their first stop from a power four or five, or came up from another level in a Cam Scadamou. And as long as the coaching is right, you can get that thing rocking and rolling pretty quick.
Yeah, Ryan, 100%. Dillingham is the man for that job, and I think he's an ASU lifer at this point. They just extended him. Not saying he would never leave. If someone like an Ohio State paid him the bills, maybe he would, but he's an
Needs to get a
alum.
call from Joe Siglione in a year if things don't go well.
I don't see that, but I think he's going to stay there. He's an alum. He loves the program. ASU is paying him well now. He is the man for the job. All it takes is one coach that has that youth, that buy-in, that ability to just resonate with people that didn't necessarily have that same juice at a different program. I mean, Scadabu was a great player at Sacramento State. I don't think anybody thought he would be this kind of player at the Power Four level, and he has been. He's been amazing. So that's been fun. And also, what I love about Kenny Dillingham, his trick plays. He has a little bit of Dan Campbell in him. They don't use Bauer Sharp to throw passes. They use different players to throw passes. And that's worked out really well for them. Love the stones on him. In fourth down situations, that fake punt was ridiculous. That play to Scadaboo where he threw it 50 yards downfield for a touchdown, ridiculous. So there's so much for other teams to learn from what they did yesterday. That is a team that was so outmatched talent-wise. But because of the coaching, the buy-in, this team believed in themselves. There is so much to love about what they did, and it shows that yes, ASU was never going to have that A&M, Texas, Ole Miss, NIL money. Probably anybody in college football won't. But that shows that the gap is big, but it can be brought a little bit closer if you have the right recipe for success. And that's what OU and so many other programs, I think, need to learn from that game yesterday.
I think one of the more encouraging things too is you know the teams that have rolled here in the college football playoff, Penn State, really, really, really good defensive line, really good defensive front. You look at Ohio State, obviously what they did in the portal, but built on really, really good defensive front, defensive ends. They got to Gabriel, what, eight times yesterday in the Rose Bowl. Certainly Texas, that's what kind of ultimately did Arizona State in, is that they would get to the red zone but stalled out a couple of times there, even to help kind of get with the fun safety. And then regardless of if Notre Dame or Georgia rolled through, so that game is currently 3-3, that's going to be a big defensive front. With the growth you saw from Oklahoma's defensive front, certainly Jaden Jackson, Grayson Halton, David Stone waiting in the wings for a much bigger role, feels like if you just get the offense on track, you've kind of got that recipe there. But it's a lot of stuff got to get better for Oklahoma, and especially when you look at the biggest barrier to anything next year is just going to be they might be playing the toughest schedule in the country, Hoove, when you swap out Tulane for Michigan and then have basically everything else.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I want to revisit something that a lot of people aren't going to disagree with me on. But facts are facts. Lincoln Riley was right about a lot of things, right? Now, big picture, Lincoln Riley can say, "See, I told you, Oklahoma. I told you. I told you." And then he can point the finger at himself and say, "Yeah, well, I suck too." Right? I mean, he's not doing any better at USC. Marginally, slightly better. But the point is, he left because he wanted certain assurances and certain things done his way. He wanted the program to evolve in a certain direction as it was entering the SEC. And rather than do that, they let him leave for, without, he wanted to leave. There's no doubt about it. He wanted to leave and he was leaving, but they didn't really, nobody really made any move to keep him. Nobody really wanted it. Once he announced he was leaving, it was good. Goodbye. See ya. This program's going in a different direction. And I'll be damned if it didn't go in a different direction. It went completely the opposite direction. And that's something that Lincoln Riley, he wanted more resources. He wanted a bigger NIL war chest and he wanted more facilities. And I mentioned Thad Turnipseed earlier. He was going in that direction to get them that. And then, things NIL took over and Oklahoma just, for one reason or another, their NIL chest was all split up when they first started this thing. It just didn't head in that right direction, I guess. I don't know the best way to say this, but they gave Brent Venables a lot of things that Lincoln Riley wanted, and Brent Venables hasn't applied those things into anything resembling a championship yet. So, long way to go for this Oklahoma program after 2 of the last 3 years with a losing record.
We shall see. It'll be a big spring, obviously. Hoping Jon Matier can bring a little bit of swagger back to that quarterback spot. Need to take another step forward on defense in the secondary. And I think a lot of that's just going to be, can you stay a little bit healthier and have like Jacoby Johnson playing corner full time if you're healthier on the wide receiver spot. So we will see
I don't
there.
did Lincoln Riley want like medical staff to say he's healthy enough to play, let's play him. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a major disconnect between all the injuries they had this year, which you can't play injured players and injured players are not going to play. And then there's why didn't those guys play? Was it on
Well,
them? Was it on
Lincoln just
the
didn't.
recovery staff or what?
Yeah, Lincoln just didn't hit for multiple days, so he just refused to let anybody get
That's
tackled for
true.
him, which
That's true. That's a
that
good
was
point.
also not good.
He didn't let the defense beat the hell out of the offense in practice like some people do, I guess.
Well, was it Jordan Kelly who had said in the 2022 like fall camp that they hit more in fall camp than they did the whole previous year? I was like, well, that's not a
Yeah.
good sign.
Yeah.
That's
I
no
remember that.
wonder. I don't see it. So we are moving though a little bit into hoop season as we get rolling here. It's a massive weekend if you go even all the way to next Wednesday, which we're not going to totally preview next Wednesday where the Sooner men take on Texas A&M because we'll podcast on Wednesday. But it starts tonight in the Lloyd Noble Center. It's a top 10 matchup, the first top 10 matchup for the Sooner women in the LNC since 2009, when number 2 Oklahoma beat number 5 Baylor. It's a battle with Texas to open up SEC play. 5-9, the Sooners swept the Longhorns a year ago. And in some ways, both these teams are very, very similar. In other ways, they're very, very different than they were a year ago. Then Saturday, we'll rock into not anything here, but in Tuscaloosa. The Sooners go to take on number 5 Alabama Porter Moser's crew. Let's start with the women, I guess, just chronologically. Talk to Jenny Bronchek on Tuesday. And this one's going to be a lot of fun, guys, I think, because Texas and Oklahoma, what Jenny Bronchek want to do, what Vic Schaefer want to do, are two different things. Texas has made 52 three-pointers, period, this season. Oklahoma will attempt 26 threes a game. You flip that around, Texas leads the country in free throw attempts per game. They just pound the paint. And it's so interesting because last year that's always like a styles clash. Oklahoma won that a year ago, obviously with the sweep. Now you add in Reagan Beers, you get back Liz Scott from injury. That allows Oklahoma to do so much more defensively, matching up with Texas and the size. Texas gets Rory Harmon back, who's just an absolute stud and missed conference play a year ago. John, I'm pretty juiced just because these were two great games a year ago. And it feels like they're even more star-studded, and it kicks off the fact that Oklahoma, this is a top 10 matchup. They're the fourth-ranked team in the SEC still, and there's 11 total in the top 25 on the women's side of things. It's just a gauntlet. You like this one? Congratulations. Win, lose, draw. You have to pack up shop and hit the road to number 15 Tennessee on Sunday at 2:00. It's the gauntlet. It begins.
Patty Gasso told us last year it's a different animal in the SEC, and she was talking about softball. It's also she could have been talking about women's basketball. I think Beers changes the game a little bit. Changes the game a lot for Oklahoma and strategy and what they want to do. Before they had, four out, five out, and they were shooting threes every trip down, getting as many shots up as they could. Now things are a little more patient, a little more deliberate. They're looking inside a lot more. They're playing. They're still getting the perimeter shots. They're still living on the outside, but they're doing it from an inside out perspective. They're going inside first, letting Reagan Beers decide what to do with the basketball. If she kicks it out, then somebody probably should be open, because you'd be an idiot to let her catch the ball and not sink on her. If she catches the ball and she's 1-on-1, she's going to turn around and shoot it. So she changes the dynamic for this offense for sure. And it's fun to watch. And this, you're right. This Texas game, a dichotomy of contrasting styles is going to be fun to watch.
Last year's hero, Lexi Keys, now kind of coming off the bench. Her and Zaya Vann have been just a fantastic 1-2 punch. And Ginny said it on Tuesday. It totally changes the pace and how much faster they end up playing. So kind of incredible there. That's the appetizer on Thursday night, I guess, or the main event on Thursday night in Norman. The main event in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, 5 p.m., is the Sooners in Alabama. Carson, you were at the Lloyd Noble Center earlier today talking with Porter and crew. What's kind of the vibe with that group as they finished out non-conference? Drake Bell over the weekend. So there's just, what, three undefeated teams left, and they're all SEC teams. Buckle up. It's showtime. This is where I think Oklahoma, it's been held against them, Carson, right, of what they did last year, what they did last year. Now that SEC plays here, maybe they can finally assert that this year is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, Ryan, there was so much excitement about this SEC schedule ahead of them at availability earlier today. The SEC is stacked this year. It's a football conference, it's a baseball conference. This year, it's a men's and women's basketball conference. Phenomenal. 10 teams ranked in the latest AP poll, two receiving votes. I mean, there is not one bad team in this league. The quote, worst team is South Carolina, which is 85 in the net. So, I mean, you look at 68 teams make the tournament. The quote, worst team in the conference is just outside of that at 85. That's impressive. There is not going to be one easy game for the Sooners, but I think they're liking that challenge, getting to play somebody good every week from here on out in the regular season. That's a lot of fun. I love that they got that big win against Michigan at a neutral site. That was where they fell last year, and that's kind of where things started to turn around. Didn't do so well in the Big 12, but they got that gritty win against Michigan in Charlotte. Gigantic. If they can go about 500, maybe a little bit better than that, I think that's a good conference season in their first year in the SEC.
When you look at this Alabama matchup specifically, I think we've been so focused on Auburn this year and what they've put together through the non-conference, but Nate Oates, Alabama. Weirdly, we've had some familiarity with it as obviously when Alabama was what number two came to the Lloyd Noble Center, Oklahoma got that big win a couple years ago, and then they had played as well Lon's final year, but. What's Oklahoma having to contend with as they head down to Tuscaloosa and everything that the Crimson Tide has to kind of reform that roster again this year?
Well, for one, very good guard play. Sears, one of the most experienced players in the nation, one of the best players in the nation. They have an incredible backcourt. They have a lot of size too on the front court. So this team is stacked. They're tried and tested, Elite Eight run last year. So this is a good team. No way to shake it. But you look at their home court advantage too. You look at Bama, you hear Bama, you think, oh, football school. That's what they're known for. They've gotten very good at basketball, and their fan base knows that. They're going to be sold out for that game. It's going to be a crazy atmosphere. So OU's got to neutralize that a little bit, slow things down, make sure they can stay within reach. If they can be within single digits, at halftime, I think they have a shot in this game. I really do.
Turn that thing over to Jeremiah Pierce. We've seen the man for the big moment when he's able to get that. I can't wait to see him tackle who some of the athleticism that is obviously like the SEC's become a spot for lottery NBA picks all over the place. And I can't wait to see what Pierce is going to do to kind of we've seen the first steps of it. Now he's got to continue to grow and continue to make sure his arc's like this all the way through SEC play.
Just remember, Jeremiah Fears, it just means more when you're in SEC play. Yeah, and that's going to be the case. I mean, we joke about it, but going 13-0 in non-conference play is awesome. You beat some good teams, you beat some solid programs. It's getting ready to mean a whole lot more.
Don't tell Porter Moser because he will yell at us, but I do have our crystal ball pulled up here on the other side of my screen. Carson, when the tournament comes around, you'll be headed to Providence. Providence! As Oklahoma is currently slated as a 5 in the latest bracketology, 5-12, which, by the way, for 3 straight bracketologies, Oklahoma and Houston have been paired together in a potential second round matchup, which you're telling me OU Kelvin Sampson writes itself. Beautiful. We'll take that. Then they're in the Iowa State kind of pod there if they make it to a Sweet 16, obviously getting way ahead of ourselves. So you'll be headed to Providence and you'll be in the Newark region. And I'll be staying in Norman as the Sooner women, obviously projected as a top 4 seed, which means you host. They're projected as a 3 seed. They'd get Albany and then Cal and Richmond, Minnesota on the other side. And they're all gridded out in Maryland's division of the draw in the second Birmingham region. So still a ways to go, as everyone knows around here. But it was the best start you could ask for non-conference stuff. Now we're off into SEC play. Should be a ton of fun. And don't look now, but here over the next couple of weeks, you're going to start seeing softball stories pop up on the website, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. Baseball's about to get into its, they've already been doing preseason stuff, but we're creeping up and they'll be out there around the corner. It is never a dull moment, guys, as we roll through. And I guess the only thing dull this week will be like one more. We just got to get through these last couple of games in the NFL. Got to get Baker to beat New Orleans so he's punching seat to the playoffs. So we can fully do the playoffs next week as well.
Baker Mayfield not voted to the Pro Bowl. How about
Yeah,
that? Had the best year of his career, and he's won two or three in like completions and percentage and touchdowns and yards in the NFC, and he's not in the Pro Bowl. The three guys that are
that's
in,
shocking.
help me out, Ryan. Who are the three guys that were in? Goff, obviously, is one of them.
Yeah, they got Goff, they got Jaden Daniels
Jaden Daniels.
and Sam
Sam
Darnold.
Darnold, yep.
He's
So those three
a
guys all
crack.
deserve it, but you can't tell me that Baker doesn't deserve it. I mean,
Yeah,
that's
that
kind of
was.
surprising.
When it came out, I was just like, "How is Baker not in the Pro Bowl?" Did you say those three guys? I was like, "Yeah, they all had three really good years as well."
Yeah.
It's we've had a lot of good NFL quarterback play in the NFC. The full list of guys for the Sooners in the Pro Bowl: Marvin Mims heads for a second straight year as a punt return specialist, but he's also certainly been getting the ball a lot more thrown his way these last couple of weeks. Creed Humphrey and Lane Johnson, the ones that you would expect from the offensive line, CeeDee Lamb, as well as Joe Mixon, and then what? Nick Bonito. Look
Nick
at Nick
Bonito.
Bonito getting named not only to the Pro Bowl, but a starter alongside TJ Watt.
Yeah, he's made a run this year for a defensive player of the year. So that's big time.
Yeah, it's huge. So one more week of getting that all settled on the. We basically just need to settle the Broncos, Bengals, Dolphins situation on one side of things, and then. Baker in the Bucks, if they just punch their ticket, they're in. Call it a weekend,
Hey,
and then we are in through to the playoffs.
What if this is again, we're recording this on Thursday. What if Baker doesn't go to the playoffs and the Bucks don't go to the playoffs because Spencer Rattler goes on the road to Tampa Bay and knocks them out as a 13.5 point underdog? That would be shocking.
It would be shocking because the Saints just lost to the Raiders.
I know.
So. Raiders would now pick 8th after having a hand on the one pick 2 weeks ago, but that's what bad franchises do, and that's why Baker Mayfield will beat the Saints because that's a bad franchise right now. So, anything else we got cooking, gentlemen? Because otherwise, it's kind of been like the Allie thing was huge, but just waiting on these last couple of portal names to get done, and it's been a pretty quiet week on the Oklahoma front since the week started on Monday,
How about this?
starting with
Couple of
Monday.
quick numbers on Wes Goodwin, the defensive coordinator at Clemson. Clemson this year ranked 62nd in the nation in total defense, 68th in rushing defense, 29th in pass defense, 46th in pass efficiency defense, but only 54th in scoring defense. They were not good in any particular area. And he is as If you believe everything you see, hear, and read, he is the leader in the clubhouse for the next Oklahoma defensive coordinator spot,
Well,
which
perfect.
again will belong to Brent Venables, but he'll lease it out to whoever he hires as the linebackers coach.
Perfect fodder for someone to serve as essentially a GA, it sounds like, because his Clemson defense is certainly not what Brent Venables had at Cooking a couple years ago. And we saw that by, I think that Wisner is still running for touchdowns against Clemson. We'll see. I don't, unconfirmed reports from Austin. But other than that, we'll have Full coverage Thursday night this evening. I'll have all the women's basketball you need. Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com. Saturday, not just Saturday, but Friday and Saturday. Carson's got a ton of content coming from Porter Moser. Everything he had to say today. Plus, obviously, our typical game day coverage on Saturdays. The Sooners are in Tuscaloosa. Same deal. Rinse, repeat on Sunday as well with women out in Knoxville. And then, of course, anything on the defensive coordinator front, anything portal, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com is your place to be. For the podcast, we'll talk to you guys next Wednesday. If you, that's a lot of information, just like, Ryan, that's so much. What's the easiest way? Well, just head to Twitter, @SoonersOnSI. That's a great way to follow it. Or @JohnEHoover, @_RyanChapman, or @CarsonDField. And if you're a YouTuber, just John Hoover Media, subscribe, hit the little bell. It's up there somewhere. Is this what I'm supposed to say? You're supposed to smash the like button as well and comment and all that stuff. Engagement, buzzword. We're just going to throw all that stuff at you. Just bookmark OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. Easiest way to do it. And other than that, we will talk to you guys next Wednesday. For who? For Carson. Take it easy. We'll see you guys next week as we prepare for some semifinal games in the Cosmo playoffs. See y'all.
The Buffalo Chicken Sub has arrived at Penn Station East Coast Subs. It's got the kick, it's got the crunch, and it's packed with bold buffalo flavor, melty cheese, and perfectly grilled chicken. Only for a limited time. Name a better pair than buffalo and chicken. Fresh cut fries and freshly squeezed lemonade? How about all of the above? Order the new Buffalo Chicken Sub any way you like it at your nearest Penn Station location today. Order ahead online at penn-station.com for easy pickup or enjoy it hot off the grill for dine-in at Penn Station East Coast Subs.